Hello, and welcome to End of Your Connectivity. I'm your host, Neil Ronahan, coming straight out of the Supernova International Ska Festival. I'm here with John Raritan.
Howdy, everybody.
And Alex DeFreitas.
Hello. What is ska?
We're going to talk about our favorite ska bands. John, yep. I hear you like Five Iron Frenzy. Discuss.
I am a big Five Iron Frenzy fan. They had a recent album that's very good. It's got a different vibe. It's a little bit darker, a little bit grumpier, but I like it a lot. Alex, yeah. What's your favorite ska band?
Whenever, like, in the mid-2000s, there was, like, a little channel bumper for the Disney Channel where, like, you're between shows. It would kind of play, like, a ska thing. I like that.
Sure.
Good. Well done.
Everybody listened to Bad Operation, and they're very good band. Highly recommend.
The safe answer, Alex, is just that one song from Tony Hawk Pro Skater.
Yeah. No. You know what I saw? I saw the Suicide Machines play New Girl from Tony Hawk Pro Skater.
Sweet.
It rocked. It was incredible. They're very good.
That does sound like a good time.
Yeah. So if you guys want to look at the Slack, we were talking about Quest for Camelot. And I wanted to alert you guys to another Nintendo published game like Quest for Camelot. It is Disney's Beauty and the Beast, a board game adventure. This is published by Nintendo.
That subtitle was a plot twist I wasn't expecting.
Yeah. In 1999, Nintendo published a video game called Disney's Beauty and the Beast, a board game adventure. And it's developed by the makers of such games as the NBA Courtside. And Excitebike 64, Left Good. Field Productions.
Good. I like that they have, like, the Disney logo in its weird font, the Beauty and the Beast logo in, like, at least three different fonts, and then a board game adventure is just Impact font.
Yep.
Just the most generic looking thing, just pasted on the
it's
logo.
It's in italics, and I think I'm
it
seeing
is in
some
italics.
Embossing going on there.
It has a drop shadow of some sort, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah,
they did something with the
that part. Looks like a photoshopped cover.
Anyway, that's the show for this week. Talked about Beauty and the Beast and ska. We're moving on. It was fortuitous. You guys talked about the Nintendo Direct, which basically aired, and then I immediately went to go listen to ska music for 3 days. But Trombone Champ came out with it, or came out on the Direct, and I already knew that this was the case with Trombone Champ after playing it on Steam. The developer's seemingly annoyance with the existence of ska, one of the few musical styles that actually features a trombone in it in the modern era. I don't like that. There were a lot of songs that I heard over the weekend that would be very good in Trombone Champ.
I suppose you could make the argument that the point of Trombone Champ is for it to sound bad. And it would be very difficult to make those ska songs sound bad.
I like where your head's at, John.
They're just too perfect.
They're too good.
Yeah.
But other than that, with the Direct,
what are your thoughts? Me and Alex kind of talked about the Direct last week. What's your overall impression?
I kind of forget what the September. Or no. Yeah, I think this in the past 13 months, that was the Direct that I was disappointed the most at. I think it's safe to say that, because last September had Theater Rhythm in it, and there was nothing in this that trumped the announcement of Theater Rhythm last September.
I have a Unicorn Overlord.
That's what that game was called.
Do I like that? Like, it's Unicorn Overlord is a game that I am very happy for the James Joneses of the world that now have a new Ogre Battle game to play. I'm very curious about Unicorn Overlord. I think it's incredible that the collector's edition just comes with a card game. That is not a game that is totally for me, but I am thrilled that it is being made by Vanillaware.
Yeah, that game looks sick. 13 Sentinels was my first Vanillaware game, and I want to see them tackle a real strategy game after seeing what they did with 13 Sentinels.
No, I mean, like, Vanillaware, at a minimum, it'll look beautiful. Because there are some games by Vanillaware that I think I remember being like, but it looked great.
Oh, the last September Direct was the Farming Direct.
We got some farming this time around.
I still look at it in that just the existence of Theater Rhythm. I don't need anything else in the direct that trumped all. Like,
I mean, that's not even like, that feels like what we said about this direct, where like, if you happen to be really into older Mario RPGs, then this direct had everything you could ever want.
And I know you guys touched on it, and that like there was a lot of things that I liked in this direct, but I already knew that they existed. And that is a key part. They're like, there wasn't really anything like, oh, that Peach game looks very cute and fun. Mm-hmm. I have a title and a little bit more about gameplay. But like, other than that, like that was kind of an announcement that I was like, okay, cool. I'll look forward to playing it. It wasn't like, oh my God, they're making a Peach game. That already happened in June. Same with Luigi's Mansion. Same with even Super Mario RPG. I'm like geeking out that they had the Qlex store there. But like, there wasn't anything. It was basically just like, we showed you this announcement trailer. Now we're showing you one where we tell you a little bit more about the changes being made to the gameplay, which is like good for a progressive marketing strategy, but boring from an announcement perspective.
Yeah. Like we said last week, some of that stuff felt like it should have just been held off from the June directable. And I think we even talked about in June the idea that I don't know that Nintendo actually has the schedule to. Nintendo should go to a two direct schedule.
and it's also the thing where like when I say it's the most disappointed by I was in a direct in the past 13 months or whatever arbitrary range, like this wasn't, it was just mid, like it wasn't terrible.
It was fine. We've seen worse.
Like there's still, and Nintendo did what they had to do. They were like, hey, we have announced things through the end of the year, tease some things for the future. Now we're going to give you a very clear roadmap of what you can expect over the next, you know, 6 to 9 months of the Switch. Because we have all of Q1 laid out. Another code's another thing like Unicorn Overlord that it is not for me. I'm thrilled that it's happening, but it's not as exciting to me.
Yeah. I do like that this direct was for games releasing in winter of this year, with most of the things announced releasing in summer of 2024.
Yep.
So that was a good, good bait and switch.
I have a feeling we'll, you know, get another probably, but February is like around the range. We'll get something probably giving us maybe a shadow drop for the Splatoon 3 DLC, which is funny because I thought that was going to shadow drop when they started the direct with it, and they're like,
yeah,
psych, 9 months, like.
Yeah, we don't need that much lead in for a DLC. Maybe we would do a Splatoon. For some reason, it's working. So
yeah, and then like they have a couple things, you know, spring and summer. Like, was Thousand Year Door was just 2024, right?
That might have had an actual date.
No, it didn't have a date. But okay. I don't think it, like Luigi's Mansion is summer, which is funny. Like, bro, Halloween. Have you heard of it?
That means there's a good chance that was announced more than a year before it releases, which is just unnecessary.
Yeah. Although Luigi's Mansion 3 did sell a boatload, so.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
It was a totally serviceable direct.
Are you telling me that Funky Kong did not move the needle at all for you?
I mean, I played a lot of Funky Kong back on Mario Kart Wii when you would do unlock characters and it was like a nice reward.
Back when things mattered.
Yeah. Back when a game wasn't just like, do you just want to like ride in the circle a bunch of times with your buddies? And you're like, okay, what do I get? And you're like, nothing.
Coins. Then you can unlock carts.
Do you want coins? And do you want to like unlock them in any kind of progression? No. Okay, well, just do it randomly. Why? Nothing means anything.
Yeah, Mario Kart 8 sucks, and everybody who likes it has bad taste in video games.
I have bad taste in video games.
I mean, so do I. It's like
it's a pretty good game. It just I liked it when I would like complete 150cc, and it would be like, oh, you just unlocked something cool, as opposed to like here's a trophy.
Yeah, it rotates.
Yeah, the one thing that I mean it's weird because it like wasn't talked about in the direct at all. They had a couple cool demos come out after the direct. Mm-hmm. Silent Hope, which is an XSEED published game that I didn't really know existed. I think Jordan's going to have a review of it up. I have the demo downloaded. I've not played it. The Dragon Quest Monsters game coming out later this year, that has a demo. And then
Dave the Diver, I think.
The Diver, which is a Steam game that people can't shut up about. So it's either overrated or very good. Time will tell. It's coming out on Switch in October. And then Star Ocean 2, or Star Ocean Second Story R, I think is the name of it, which I played some of that demo. And I know, John, you comically are, you picked up the first Star Ocean remake on Switch, which I reviewed back when it came out in 2019 and liked. And I was playing the demo for Star Ocean 2, and it kind of looks beautiful. Like, it is the reason why I don't think, or it's like very emblematic of why not everything needs to be HD 2D, because this has the same look as Star Ocean 1, where you have like a sprite in a 3D overworld, except for this, like the 3D overworld doesn't look like it was farted out of a PSP. It looks like they actually remade this for the system that it's on. And I'm still, I mean, very early in the demo. The demo lets you play 3 hour. You have a 3 hour time limit. Can only get to like level 12 in a certain point of the game. But it looks really good. It's got Motoi Sakuraba music, who's he does a lot of like Camelot stuff. In addition to the Star Ocean games, and I think he does Tales music too.
He did Dark Souls.
Oh, did he do Quest 4 Camelot?
That's a different Camelot.
Well, that's okay. It had horrible music.
Let's see. What did he do? A lot of stuff that I don't know of from the early 90s. Star Ocean, Everybody's Golf, Tales of Destiny, Mario Golf, Valkyrie Profile, Golden Sun.
There's a good one.
Tales of Symphonia, Bite and Kaidos. Remember that game that I heard it came out on Switch?
When I bought Star Ocean, I did hover over the button for Bite and Kaidos for a second, and then didn't buy it.
Eternal Sonata, which is a bizarre game that kind of unironically rules. It's about Chopin, and it's a JRPG. Like,
wasn't that one of those weird like Xbox 360 exclusive JRPGs
It eventually came out on PS3, but I played that on Xbox 360, and that is a bizarre ass game, and I love it. A lot of Tales games, a lot of Golden Sun games. And I mean, like, he's just, he did do Dark Souls as well.
He was on the Kid Icarus Uprising Dream Team.
Yep.
Ooh.
So that means he's friends with Sakurai. And he's also doing music for Ayudin Chronicle.
Oh, cool.
Which that got a release date during the Direct. That game looks neat.
Yeah, I'm not following it at all, but I know there's discourse around it.
Yeah.
That's from the creator of Suikoden, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, the Star Ocean 2 demo, I'm excited that that's there. That game's coming out in November. I'm glad that I have the head start on it, because it comes out about 2 weeks before Super Mario RPG, and every other RPG will go in the trash when that game comes out.
Does the demo progress transfer to the final game? Sweet. Yeah. Okay.
And it is neat, because the game that you're playing, the Star Ocean that is available on Switch right now, that is, they took a PSP remake of a Super Famicom game and just put it on Switch. What's cool about Star Ocean 2 is that this is I forget if it's a Super Famicom or a PS1 game. It might have been a PS1 game initially. It was another one that, I think it was a PS1 game that actually came out in America back in like 1999. Then there was a PSP remake that also was brought over to the West. And then the Switch version is a new remake of it. It is not a port of a PSP game like the last one, which just makes me feel like I'm being listened to as a video game reviewer. Yeah. Because I looked at my review for the first one, and like everything that I'm like, it doesn't explain enough. And like, this just looks like a PSP game. They just responded to all of that. So that's cool.
Yeah, it is surprisingly, I guess it wouldn't be that weird for like a Super Nintendo game to kind of throw you to the wolves like that and be like, read the manual, you idiot. But for a PSP game to just throw you to the wolves and be like, I guess you should figure out how to combat. Because like, I started that game not being totally confident if it was real time or turn based combat. And then like, I just ran into a dude, and it's like, okay, I guess I can move. Like, it's remarkably just, you're on your own. Google it.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to tooling around with those demos more. And yeah, like, there's Switch has a good lineup. There's a lot of exciting stuff. That direct was still mid.
Yeah, a lot of really cool looking remakes.
Yeah, a lot of cool remakes, and also Thousand Year Door.
Right. Yeah, lesser yep. remakes. We can't all be Mario versus Donkey yeah. Kong.
Yep. Oh God, I forgot about that.
That's the best thing from the direct. That's the biggest announcement.
I think what bummed me out about that is that it's just a straight remake of the GBA game.
Yeah, I wish it was a combo of the GBA game and the Game Boy game.
Yeah,
that'd be cool.
And or like, just a new GBA, one. The GBA game's pretty good. But I've played it before. I've played it a couple times. I don't know if I want to play it again.
I kind of want to just. I'm probably gonna buy it just to spite Thousand Year Door.
I mean, I have a 2-year-old who will pick up my Switch and go to the newsfeed, and like today he did that and just immediately started watching all the new Mario game trailers.
Mm-hmm.
I heard him play the Thousand Year Door trailer, and I'm like, get out. Yeah. Play Origami King like
this
you were
is
meant
an
to.
Origami. This is a post Sticker Star household.
I mean, I do. It makes you know, someone who has very fond memories of playing Super Mario RPG as a kid, when my 2-year-old is just beaming watching the trailer to Super Mario RPG, I'm just like, hell yeah, let's go, kid.
Yeah.
But I, because of the fact that I have 2 children that like Mario and Donkey Kong, I will likely get that Mario and Donkey Kong game regardless. It's just that I think that is the reason why I will get it. I think if I did not have children, I would not get that video game.
Sure.
What if your kid like one day looks at you and is like, I think I prefer a Thousand Year Door over Origami King. I like the Goombas with hats.
Yeah. He needs a busty boo.
God. There's always like one more character with boobs that I forgot about.
Yeah. Like does the Bob-omb wear a sailor's hat?
And have a beard.
Yeah, do you have like a lightning bulb thing, and then do they have a pacifier in their mouth? That's all I need to know.
I'm honestly amazed that the Paper Mario fan base didn't get more excited about Mario Golf Super Rush having Goombas wearing cloaks in it, or Koopas wearing cloaks.
I mean, that was definitely what they did. They were like, listen, everybody's talking about how they just want like a Koopa wearing a cravat.
Yeah.
So we need to put that at this video game.
Yeah, Mario Golf offered everything you're looking for in a Paper Mario game, and you all yep. turned it down. Mario Golf might be the best Paper Mario game since Thousand Year Door.
I mean, but did it have a Mauser wearing tap shoes?
No, but it did have a Chargin' Chuck playing golf.
Yeah,
it had a King Babam.
Yeah. Yeah,
for some reason.
Chargin' Chuck's pretty good in that.
I love the running gag of just Chargin' Chuck is never allowed to play American football. He can yep. play any other sport. It can never be American. Even in the game he was invented for, he throws baseballs.
Yep. It's just like a Japanese developer just being like, what is sports?
Yeah.
So anything else happen other than the direct? How about that Final Fantasy VII Rebirth trailer, fellas? Let's go.
I still haven't seen it.
Clouds on a Segway.
That's the only part I've seen is Clouds on a Segway. And I went, that looks weird.
I guess I should have seen that.
Were there Segways in the original game? I don't remember there being Segways in the original game.
I don't remember. I don't think so.
Hashtag not my final.
Is that
fantasy.
Like in the beach section where he's riding that? That makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think they just got rid of Chocobos. They needed to modernize Final Fantasy. So they replaced Chocobos with Chocobo brands.
There's chocobos in Final Fantasy 16. Like the most like serious like going Game of Thrones fantasy people fucking this game. They still had chocobos.
Can you imagine if Final Fantasy 16 just cut directly from a sex scene to just like a dude in heavy battle armor riding a Segway across a field? That would be amazing. I'd buy a PS5 for that.
Alex, did you get farther? Have you like beaten Final Fantasy 16?
I have not.
It's weird because the combat is very fun. I actually like the gameplay of that game. But the way it's such a try hard, like we're going to be serious. Look at how serious we are. Like when it really, the moments when it leans into camp are very good, but then it tries to be serious and it just has this character that's just like, you know, like, of course, there's just some evil woman that is just into boning, because that's how you know it's a real serious show.
Oh, you know it's serious because she straddles a guy, but then that guy dies and she's like not hurt by it.
Yeah, yeah.
That's how you know she's real wicked.
Anyway, I welcome the fact that Final Fantasy VII Rebirth is just weird and goofy, because that's the way it should be.
Yeah.
I find it, I have a lot of nostalgia for Final Fantasy VII. It is not my favorite Final Fantasy game. I just, you know, was of the appropriate age to play it, that, you know, it definitely was not my truly formative RPG, but was around that time. And I just love, I love seeing Nomura just go absolutely insane. Like, this is, remember that thing that you loved that people like, this is the story. What if I messed up with that and made it Kingdom Hearts of shit?
As someone who didn't grow up with Final Fantasy VII, I am a fan because of Remake. I think Remake is the thing that draws me to that game, and I pay more attention to the story because I'm curious to see how they twist it. Like, I don't think that story is incredible. It's good. It works. But yeah, I'm very excited to see what they do different.
Yep. And you know, it'll be weird.
I'm not even sure if it needs to be good. Just needs to be bizarre.
Nope. I mean, it's also like the combat system in that game is pretty solid, and like, as long as they keep a similar structure, then just keep going in weird directions, like lean into your Dementor nonsense.
Yep. And just the fact that they have all that budget to work with too, they can stretch out Final Fantasy VII and realize it in a way that they just couldn't otherwise.
All right, so John, do you want to talk about Starfield?
Sure. I got Starfield. I actually paid up for the early access thing, so I've been playing Starfield for extra long. Back when Baldur's Gate 3 came out, this was sort of like my one other game that I thought could potentially take Game of the Year for me. And I'm in this weird spot with it where I think that, like, it might be Game of the Year for me, but it's a much more niche game than I was expecting. I do think it's getting some unfair criticism because, like, the entire time they've been developing it, they've been like, this isn't No Man's Sky, it's a Bethesda Game Studios RPG. And then it came out and people were like, why isn't it No Man's Sky? And they're like, well, we said it wasn't going to be the entire time. But it strikes me as a very, like, old school space RPG. I've compared it a lot to, and I've seen other people do this too, compare it a lot to, like, Wing Commander Privateer. Like, you're just flying around, landing on planets and space stations, talking to people, picking up quests. Like, it's very much an RPG. It is not a space sim. But the elements of a space sim that it brings in, I think it does really well. And it does some cool stuff space sim wise that I think that I haven't really seen other, like, legit space sims do. Like, the one that I saw pretty early on was, like, I went into this system where there were some really high level pirates that were way above what I could handle. And it taught me that, like, even when you're flying your ship, there are stealth mechanics. Like, if you've played Skyrim, you know, you can sneak and steal things. So you can sneak as a spaceship. And it's cool because you can go into your, like, power distribution settings, where you have, like, you know, your different weapon systems and your shields and your engines and your grav drive and all that stuff. And at any point in the game, you can, like, redistribute power to those different things, get them to recharge faster, things like that. But if you want to sneak, you can just pull all the power out of all of them except for, like, one notch in your engine and then just sort of, like, drift. And I love that stuff, because it does sort of, like, while it is mostly an RPG, it's doing its space sim thing in a very Bethesda RPG way. So I love the fact that I can sneak as a spaceship. I'm enjoying it a whole lot. I don't think it has the mass appeal that something like Skyrim does, but I think it has a very specific audience that, like me, is going to be obsessed with it for a very, very long time. But yeah, I'm enjoying it a whole lot. Great soundtrack too.
I've actually, that's probably the most that I've experienced of the game. The soundtrack does seem very good.
Yeah, it's on Spotify.
It's one of those things where it's a game that I will play at some point. I just have not had the time, and it is not as high of a priority, especially, honestly, hearing a lot of how you have described the game. I'm like, oh, this seems cool. I am in no rush. Like, once again, much in the Unicorn Overlord or the Another Codes of the world, very excited that this game exists for the people that are really into this type of game. But it's like, I want to mess around with it. I don't need to spend days of my life in that.
Yeah.
But it is like, I don't know, like, it's cool to see Bethesda do more than just, oh, we made Skyrim again.
Yeah, when I know people who love Skyrim and Fallout who have bounced off this real hard.
Yeah.
Which is, like, you know, too bad for them. But it's like, I remember, like, when Fallout 3 came out, because that was obviously, you know, like, Bethesda purchased the Fallout license. Like, that was a thing they added on to their existing repertoire of Elder Scrolls. And when Fallout 3 came out, it was very much, it was like, oh, this is Sky, or this is Oblivion at the time. But you have a gun and it's post-apocalyptic. And I kind of expected this to be much more just like, yeah, this is Skyrim, but you're in space. And I think it's way different than that. It definitely has those bones, but it feels more unique than Fallout did when compared to sort of the baseline Bethesda RPG. It feels like they're actually doing something new, which I really like.
I remember, was Arena and Daggerfall, was that also Bethesda?
Yeah, they've had Elder Scrolls has been their thing the whole way through. Like, that's been their game. Once they were, like, pretty successful, I think it was after Oblivion.
That's when they got Fallout.
Yeah, they went to them and said, like, well, if you could do anything else, like, if you wanted to do any other franchise, what would you do? And they were like, well, we really like Fallout. And they're like, cool, we'll get you the rights.
Yeah, because Oblivion was my first exposure to Bethesda.
Yeah.
I had an Xbox 360 around launch, and that was like the game to play for a year. And it was rad. And then I also played Fallout 3, and honestly, I feel like it'll probably scratch a similar itch of going from Skyrim to Starfield, much like going from Oblivion to Fallout 3, where I think I have a feeling I will ultimately prefer the Oblivion and the Skyrim part of this equation.
Mm-hmm.
But I like that there's that variety in that style of game.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm still, you know, I'm super excited for Elder Scrolls 6. I did see in the court documents that came out today from the FTC hearing that some people were a little panicked that Microsoft said that Starfield wasn't, or Elder Scrolls 6 wasn't planned to come out until 2026 or later. And I was like, dude, 2026 would be an insanely fast turnaround for that game.
Yes.
Like,
yeah.
Like, assuming that it couldn't have entered full development until mm-hmm. Starfield went gold, that's a 3-year dev time. There's no way. Like, because love or hate Bethesda games, they're massive. Like, Starfield is just a ridiculously huge game. One of the things I did recently was I saw somebody pointed out that because Starfield, like, it bases its universe on actual planets, like actual star systems, and Halo also did that, you can go and find Reach. And so I was like, sweet, I'm gonna build my base on Reach. And so I went to that star system, went to where that planet should be, and obviously it's not called Reach, but you get there, and because they're using, like, the same actual science for all their planets, it has, like, a very similar, like, climate and kind of appearance to Reach, which I thought was really cool. So yeah, I built a base there.
You probably don't want to do that, John.
I mean, haven't you heard of?
Yeah, you're not the first John from Reach.
If he knew, if I know one thing, it's that Reach will never fall. Yeah.
And now it's all, I mean, they're all owned by the same company, same universe.
Essentially.
Mm-hmm.
The greater theory of every Microsoft game is related.
I look forward to how Fallout and Viva Pinata tie together.
And Viva Pinata and Flight Sim and Cameo Elements of Power.
Yeah.
Grabbed by the Ghoulies.
And Conker's Bad Fur Day.
It's all one.
I like how we just immediately, I mean, we are a Nintendo podcast. We immediately just go to Rare games.
It's just, it's the most, like, if you're looking at Microsoft's catalog, you have a lot of, you know, first person adventure games, and then for some reason also Rare.
I guess I could say Gears of War, but where's the fun in that?
Neil, you're playing a game.
I will talk about video games now. It is my turn. So now I've had a couple weeks with Baldur's Gate 3. Started playing it on PS5, got the early access for that around the same time John got the early access for Starfield. And my goal of playing this in multiplayer, in a like a campaign with people online, has been going swimmingly. I believe we are at the end of Act One. I'm trying to not look at plot stuff as much online, so I don't know entirely for sure. We just had a party at the whatchamacallit. We stopped the goblins, we came back, and we had a party with the tieflings and stuff.
That's a good moment. Yeah.
It's hard to say when you're at the end because there's so much fluidity in what order you can do things that I have no idea if you're at the end.
Yeah, like now we're going to like go to some moon tower or something.
Yeah.
That Halson was like, we should go here next. And he's a bear. So like, that sounds like a good plan.
If anyone would know, it would be a bear. Yeah.
Yeah. I'll just trust the bear. But I am playing as a tiefling bard that I was stumped on a name for, and then I saw that I could get them to play the flute, and it just made me think of Xenoblade 3, and I was going to name my character Noah, and I was like, Noah's too generic of a name, I will just name my tiefling bard Shulk. So Shulk the tiefling bard is going around. When we were waiting in the I was waiting for Andy Gergen, former Connectivity co-host OG, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
He was like buying stuff from the he was doing some shopping, and I just my tiefling bard took off all their clothes, started playing the loot that we took off the dead body of someone, and was just there free balling it with my penis B, playing music as people dropping coin for me. Felt very powerful. But yeah, I mean, it's fun as hell. Playing it multiplayer is incredible. It just feels like I'm doing a D&D campaign. Mm-hmm. And some other like choice moments is so I'm playing. I mean, it's basically just like an NWR gang. You can watch it happen live. Scott Thompson has been another Connectivity OG. Scott Thompson has been streaming whenever we play. I forget if his Twitch account is Okay Soda or like Okay Soda, but whenever we've been playing, he's been streaming. It's been some good clips so far, but there was a moment early on when we first got to that like first big town that you go to, where Grant Buell he wrote a couple things for NWR back in the day. Him and Andy go way back, but Grant just kept on getting arrested and put into prison because he was branded a thief. And it was just the kind of thing where it's like we were just getting into the town and he was just going around looting everything, and then we just get thrown in jail, and then like he's like, oh, I escaped prison, oh, I'm dead, and we're like, well, what do we do now? And then it was at that point where it was like, well, I'm just gonna go talk to people, you guys can figure this out.
Just sort of rolling through decisions, not like quick saving and going back.
Like we have had moments where we're like, oh, we're about to like, let's quick save because we're likely going to get in a huge fight. We have gone back, like we haven't done a lot of saves coming. Like there was one moment when we got to the goblin village, and we came with like that goblin you could free from that town. So like we were cool, but then what happened was, I believe it was Grant's like halfling druid or halfling ranger got in an argument with a goblin and started a fight. And then I had just got a burning hands move. And was about to drop that and then fucked up doing it, and then got every other goblin involved in the fight. And we're like, oh, we're going to die. So then we rolled back the save, but we've been kind of living with our consequences for the most part.
Yeah, it's hard to find that balance.
Yeah, because it does feel the kind of thing that like yeah, like if it's gonna be like a, it's gonna be like a total party kill or something, like, and just go back, like, this is gonna be right. a pain in the ass. But we've gotten in some hairy situations and managed to survive. It does help that you can just kind of like run away from battle and just go to camp.
Yeah. Yeah, they're pretty chill about like where you can rest and stuff.
It's
like
funny.
That.
I mean, it is funny whenever you like escape battle and then you just go back to camp.
Yeah.
Because that actually happened to me and I just was stuck there because I couldn't do anything until everybody else and they were in the battle. And then I believe someone died and then I just talked to Withers and revived them. But when they get revived, they come back to camp. They don't go back out to the battle. This, it's incredible. I also did start a single player campaign as a wood elf druid. But I'm still in like the tutorial area.
Sure.
It is a very good game though. Switch 2, baby. I think it can happen.
It feels like it. I mean, though, honestly, I mean, if you can get it running on, well, the weird thing, I think the funny thing about porting that game is that like when you see like the opening areas, like act one and act two, you're like, oh yeah, this will run on, like, this could have been on last gen stuff. And then you get to like act three and it's like, oh, this is why. Cause like that'll just like, I've seen footage of the PS5 running act three and it's like, cool, 20 frames per second. It's like, oh golly. God. Okay.
I will. It is once again, like playing this game after a lot of the discourse, because everybody, like, there's that whole thing about like, it's ruined video games for everybody else. And like, this game's buggy as shit.
Oh, it's very like,
yeah.
The music just cuts out randomly, and it's been fun like playing, because now like the first couple days, like, we played it a lot the first week, but now we're kind of on just a weekly cadence. But it's funny because like every week I feel like there's some patch that like fixed something to break something else, and like it's fine. Like, I'm not saying this to complain, because like part of the charm is that, but it's like, I don't assume that it ran better on PC compared to PS5. Oh, it probably ran differently.
Well, I playing it at launch on, because it came out like a month earlier on PC, and I think I can promise you that playing it at launch on PC was buggier than what you're playing now. Like,
yeah,
you're benefiting from a month of patches.
Yeah.
Like, my game is still, I cannot romance one of the characters because a key NPC that I need to talk to just never spawned in my game. So like, I've like kind of accepted I'm buying this on Xbox when it comes out on Xbox, purely to just do a true run where I romance Karlach as God intended.
I still haven't gotten to Karlach yet.
Karlach,
talked about him. We might actually watch Tuesday night, September 19th, because or catch up on the stream, because I think the plan is to go try to find Karlach.
Good. Karlach is the best character in the game.
Who's going to resurrect first?
I don't know.
If you're playing in multiplayer, can you all romance the same person?
Ooh, good question. I think so. My homeboy has been striking out so far. I've been going after Shadowheart because that seems like easy going.
Yeah.
I
mean, just stand near Gale for a few minutes and he'll start.
Yeah.
No.
You know what's wild
is slut.
I have gotten the worst roles with Gale.
What?
Like, compared to everybody
it's
else,
hard
like
to
everybody
not
else,
get
like
Gale.
And like, that's, and it's not like as far as like, because I'm, you know, bard, like, so like, mm-hmm. performance, persuasion, like, very good at that. I've like, I think I might have crit failed a role to like sweet talk Gale. But yeah, I mean, it's the kind of thing where I'm also playing a multiplayer where like, it's fucking around with this. Like, I'm not necessarily like going after like, oh, let's go for the romance. Let's try to min max this shit. Like, no, I'm just going around and walking around naked with my tiefling bard and seeing how we can do this.
Oh, I mean, the one time I played with Alex, I was fully nude the entire time.
Yeah. As soon as you start multiplayer, everybody takes their clothes off.
Yeah. No, I took off my underwear. My underwear is gone.
Did you throw it?
No, yeah, I still have it.
I threw my underwear at Matt because when else am I going to get to do that? And it makes it destroys your underpants.
I
could
drive 45 minutes south.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Yeah, so I like did that. I'm like, welp, guess this little Santa Claus looking dwarf is nude for the rest of the game.
You didn't look too hard. It was almost like you were really okay with accepting your fate.
It was fine. Yeah, no, it works for him. He has a very confident posture.
He does.
Yeah. I do like, there was one screenshot that Matt grabbed where Alex was like in a conversation and my little nude dwarf is just like crouched in the background, bow drawn, ready to attack.
So do you play as your own character when you do multiplayer, or?
So if you join somebody else's game, you make a new character for that game.
Okay. Okay.
So when we joined Alex, we all made brand new characters.
Okay. Do they start at level one, or do you kind of?
They auto level.
Yeah, they scale to whatever. The only downside is
kind of cool.
It works really well. The only downside is that like you obviously don't get any like gear, so yeah, you stay in the starting gear, and then we just pillaged Alex's inventory to load out our characters.
Yeah, I mean, I just love the flexibility of it. Like it's doing the, and even like the fact that there is like that tactician skill level. Like if if that's how you want to play, or if you just want to screw around with the story and have combat be easier. Like there's just so much fluidity in what you do in this game.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's how real D&D is. You know, you talk to your GM and like they'll run the game the way the players want the game to be run. So, I mean, if they're a good GM.
Yeah. And I mean, like I've read some stuff with Baldur's Gate 3 about how like, it's not like a real DM. It's like, well, no shit.
Right.
There are limitations,
like
sure.
Yeah, there are limitations to it, but at the same time, like, no, but like they do a good job of giving you flexibility within the confines of the video game. And it is after playing and loving Divinity 2, it's just like really cool seeing them take the traditional D&D rule set and just taking it for a spin. I just think a lot just how it works on a controller. Like there's a learning curve. But like now it's just like, all right, when it's my turn, like I'll look through my wheels, see what I got to do. Like it's very clear and concise as what does what.
Yep.
Humorously, on the PS5 version, tooltips were turned off.
Good.
So there was a lot of things where I was like, "What the? How do you do this?"
Yeah.
And then like the next week we played, it was like I got a tooltip for everything. I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Because a lot of it was like messing around with buttons and like accidentally like crouching, and I was like, oh, okay, that's how I do that. As opposed to now when it's like you go to an area where you should hide and a tooltip comes up, it's like, oh, this is how you crouch.
Yeah, I had the first like week or so that I was playing it was exclusively mouse and keyboard. So then Alex and Matt mentioned they were playing it with a controller. I was like, I should try that. And I'm like, I have no idea how to play this game.
Yep. Yeah.
That's how I felt going to mouse and keyboard. It's like, no, I'm going back to controller. This feels
mouse
right.
Mouse and keyboard is easy. You don't even need the keyboard most of the time. You just click the button for what you want to do.
Yeah, but all your the controller right feels there. So nice. I can click up on the D-pad and I can jump.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
You just click the jump button from your hotbar on PC.
Fair.
I don't know what that hotbar is.
It's the bar that looks very hot.
What key am I pressing?
Spicy. You don't press a key. You just move your mouse down to the bar and then you click the jump once.
That's too many clicks. Too many...
It's one click.
Movements.
It's one
click.
I'm
a controller boy.
I need to tap up
on the D-pad and then press another button to confirm the jump. Damn it.
After playing Divinity 2 with a controller, I was like, I'm playing this with a keyboard, mouse and keyboard, and I greatly prefer it. But I'm glad that it works both ways.
You know what? I also want to point out, playing this game on PS5 with the same group that I'm playing Baldur's Gate 3 with. I'm also before Baldur's Gate 3 came out on PS5, we were playing Demio on VR, which worth pointing out, Demio on VR, playing it on Oculus just works flawlessly cross-platform with PSVR users. And the fact that when I am doing voice chat on the Oculus Quest, I just put the thing on my head and everybody can hear me. And I can hear them, and it works flawlessly, unless you take it off your headset. But that's like if you have to go pee, just leave the headset on, or else then you'll get like kicked out of the game. And then on PS5, like, okay, it's weird that like I need a specific Bluetooth, Sony Bluetooth thing, but like I just took a headset I plugged it in the controller and it just works. I can talk to people. They can hear me. I can hear them.
You didn't download an app?
Yeah. As a Nintendo player, I'm just baffled by like online things that work.
I think I'm weird because whenever I play a game online, even if it has like, if I'm playing like Xbox, which has like a perfectly functional party system, I just immediately go like, do you guys want to just get on Discord?
Yep. Well, you know what's crazy? You could start a Discord call and just transfer to PS5.
I think you could do that on Xbox too. I just don't do that. Can. I just use my phone because
I mean that's also we're doing it that way because Scott is streaming. Makes it so he can stream, you know, what we're talking about along with game audio.
Yeah.
But once again, it's so wild to have this where I'm like, oh, you mean like I don't really need to do anything? It just works.
Yeah.
Just baffling.
Are you getting his stream banned running around naked all the time?
No, he has nudity turned on, so I just have tasteful leaf over my dome. Okay.
That's funny.
Should we get to listener mail and then close out the show?
Sure.
All right, so Chariot Goblin said a couple weeks ago, hey, Connectivity, last week, or several weeks ago, Sony announced the absurd price increase to their PS Plus tiers. It is now $80 per year to play online. Do you think Sony will backtrack on this? Microsoft once backtracked on a price increase. Relating this back to Nintendo, do you think one or both of the NSO tiers will ever get a price increase? I think Sony's price increase is both absurd and not ridiculous. The ridiculous part is how high it went, not necessarily the ending price, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Are you talking about the percentage versus the final number?
I think it went from $50 to $80, and I think their like Game Pass tier went from like $80 to $130 or something ridiculous. Like it is like a 50% increase for everything. Which is a huge increase, wild.
I do think it's pretty, I think it's kind of comparable to Xbox's pricing though.
Yeah.
Hard because Xbox doesn't do a yearly price. They just do the monthly stuff.
Yep.
Yeah. Which kind of obscures like how much you are in fact paying. Like Game Pass Ultimate is this what I have, and it's $14 a month.
That's comparable price.
Yeah, it comes out similar. Do I think that like I think that for, you know, for Game Pass Ultimate or arguably Sony's Game Pass equivalent,
which is fine. As someone that thankfully subscribed to this before they hiked up the price, it's fine. It's a pretty good equivalent.
And I think that price for those, it's not cheap, but like you're also getting a lot. Like I kind of think it's fair. Like I'm okay with that pricing. The one that I think is questionable is like the just sort of base level that there's not just like a base level playing online subscription. Like even for Microsoft, mm-hmm. that like what used to be Xbox Live Gold is you still get like 25 Game Pass games. Like they do try to make it worth that money, but I kind of want the option to just be like, no, I don't want that. I just want to be able to play online. That's not like an option.
Probably the end goal of this. And honestly, PlayStation got me to go up to the Game Pass tier because I'm playing Baldur's Gate 3 online. And I was like, okay, I'm going to need PS Plus. I'll just pay for a year and like, oh, okay, I can get their Game Pass thing for like $20 more or whatever it wound up being. And I'll just do that for a year. But at the prices that they are now, I'm probably not going to re-up for that. It just doesn't really seem that worthwhile. It is also funny that they announced this and they were like, and here's the PS Plus game for this month, the shitty Saints Row game that came out last year, and then the company died.
Yep.
As far as Nintendo, I think it's going to happen eventually, but I imagine it'll happen with the next console when they have that opportunity.
Yeah. And well, that's going to be a year away, fellas. So,
and they have
not
so
be
much,
too much longer.
They have so much wiggle room. I mean, they're like, what is a family plan cost on NSO?
Yeah.
$80 for the expansion.
Yeah. And I think it's
right. So the highest you can pay is $80 a year for the absolute, like the top tier Nintendo subscription costs as much. The top tier Nintendo subscription for five people costs as much as a single person at the lowest subscription on PlayStation.
I think that Nintendo's price for, you know, their base and the expansion pack is fine. I mean, I think the caveat of I think Nintendo's online servers generally kind of suck. Mm-hmm. But for what you get as far as the NES games, you know, the DLC and N64, Super Nintendo, Genesis, Game Boy, all that, like that's kind of fine. I do think if they increase the price, they need to have a value add to it. Like if they're going to bump that up to like $100 a year, you need to have something else there. And I think they were smart to do that expansion pack because it does give you that barometer of like, here's the, you want to play online and here's the, you know, like you want a bunch of N64 and Game Boy Advance and Genesis games.
Yeah. Like I do think, and I know people disagree with this, I think the pricing for NSO stuff is like totally fair.
Yeah. There's a lot of games there. They might be garbage games, but it's I love going to the local video store and seeing the Ignition Factor available for rent and then never playing it.
Right. No, it's, I mean, yeah. People need to actually play those NSO games before they complain about the NSO games.
I just hope that we don't have to reset the library.
Have you played Excitebike 64 yet? I'll bet not.
Actually, I have not. I have not.
It's great.
Excitebike 64. It's a good game. I've played it before. I just haven't played it on Switch.
Are you tough enough?
It's not. That's not a good video game. I did play that when it came out on NSO. That too.
Yeah. No, the NSO library is awesome. There's some great stuff on there. There's stuff that I had never played that I got to play for the first time. Like,
you could play it if you had a Japanese account, but now it doesn't matter. Like, I'm blanking on the name of it. The NES fighting game. Join Mech Fight. Now you just play that on the Western version of that. That's a game that never came out in America.
Yeah.
That is cool as hell. I love that they're doing stuff like that.
Throw Custom Robo on the American NSO app.
Yeah,
you can leave it in Japanese. I'll figure it out.
Yep. I mean, I played 25 hours of Mario Super Picross, which is only available in Japanese. Or playing Tetris Attack, and not called Tetris Attack because they can't call it that anymore, but they can release the Japanese version with lipstick and everything.
They should just release the Yoshi version, but just change the title screen.
Yeah.
Call it Yoshi Attack.
I don't really care for Super Rush. I mean, I do. I don't hate Super Rush, but Mario Golf 64 is just so much better, especially with miniature golf.
I'm amazed they haven't added the Game Boy Mario Sports games yet.
Because what? Are golf and tennis both on N64?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Both of them.
Yeah, neither of the Game Boy Advance or Game Boy Color golf or tennis games.
I hope they add those.
Those have to be on the way at some point.
That GBA tennis game is a 10 out of 10 according to Nintendo World Report.
Mario Tennis or
Power Tour?
I believe Mario Tennis on GBA got a 10 out of 10.
Valid. Game's great.
I mean, it's a very good game. I believe Stan Ferguson. I believe it was a review that got like dunked on in the something awful forums or something. People saying it's the worst review of the year or some shit.
Those people haven't played Mario Tennis on the Game Boy Advance.
It's a, like, even me, who thinks that those games are maybe a little overrated. No, the GBA Tennis games rocks.
It's those games are just like I think my nostalgia has absolutely overrated those games for myself.
I think the Game Boy Color ones are a little rougher than we all remember.
Those are the ones I have more nostalgia for. Yeah, but
and that's fair. I like Super Mario RPG a lot, John.
Yeah,
like no, we all have our faults.
They are like my comfort games. Those handheld Mario Sports games.
Yeah, I'm not here saying they're bad. I'm just saying I think we overinflate how good they were.
Oh, but absolutely.
Nostalgia is a hell of a drug.
Yeah.
Camelot's great at that. I think really highly of Golden Sun. That game is probably just a regular old JRPG.
I mean, Golden Sun is like Quest 64, except for not shit.
Yeah.
Has Golden Sun hit NSO yet? I know it was announced.
Yeah, it was part of that announcement. It's not out yet. Honestly, it's not out yet? Okay. Oh, and I guess maybe this is a segue. When Golden Sun hits GBA, we should do a Golden Sun game club.
We should. That game is going to be just like ham and cheese sandwich.
I remember liking Golden Sun as a kid. I don't think I ever finished it.
I love those first two games.
The GameCube just be the first two?
I mean, the TS one's real bad.
Dark Dawn's just right there. Just finish it.
Yeah, but then I have
finish
to
finish up
like,
the trilogy.
I'm assuming the first two will both be on NSO. Whereas like Dark Dawn, I'll have to like go find a way to play.
This is a story that I think has been told on multiple podcasts over the years, but I think it was one of the first E3s that I went to, either 2009 or 2010. It was they announced Golden Sun Dark Dawn. They had a playable demo. The playable demo was literally a cutscene. You walk like 10 feet and then there's another cutscene and the demo ends. Like nice. There was like no, it was basically just like it is running on a DS. Check it out.
Well, but it's then, not like it's impressive.
It's a kind of
ugly DS game.
The Takahashi brothers, like the dudes from Camelot,
yeah,
were just like hanging out there, like excitedly being like, "What'd you think?" And it's like there wasn't a game. Like,
yeah,
I'm happy that you guys get to make this game, but this is barely a playable demo.
You showed me exactly enough to know that I don't like that it's 3D now and not sprite based.
Yeah. But seriously about a game club, although I'd be down for talking about Golden Sun when it hits NSO. After 2D Mario, which I think we will be recording in the next few weeks, I need to play me some more new Super Mario Brothers games before we do.
Me too.
We should probably start to get that on the books probably sometime late September, early October is when we'll record that. But after that, is our next game club Paper Mario.
Ooh, I'm gonna hate it the whole way through, but it kind of seems like that's the way we're going.
And I think as we talked about this a little bit before the show, we will not start this game club until probably early next year. Super Mario RPG will kind of be an unofficial lead into it, because I think that is also, you know, that is part of the formation of Paper Mario. Maybe we'll even talk a little bit about Mario and Luigi games along this journey. But I guess we'll probably start with Paper Mario 64 sometime, early next year.
I'm gonna have to buy Origami King.
You should. It's an incredible game. We'll have to think about the ordering because I think we should save Thousand Year Door for when the remake comes out.
So we just skip over it, go from Paper Mario to Super.
Oh, is there like some sort of weird machete order for Paper Mario?
We can think about this. What's the dumbest way that we can play these games? Reverse Metacritic order, like.
Ooh.
Start with Sticker Star.
Yeah.
I already have that one, so that would be nice. Though I might play it in a waking dream, because that game actually looks really nice in HD.
It's a very good looking game. It sounds nice too. Gameplay? Yeah. But yeah, well, we'll have to figure out some sort of order, but I feel like starting with Paper Mario 64 is probably what we should start with and then figure it out from there.
We could at some point do a weird Camelot game club where we do one Shining Force game, one Mario Sports game, and one Golden Sun game. You get to pick one of each category.
And then one Hot Shots golf game.
Yes. Yeah. Be the weirdest game club. But it'd be great the whole way through.
All right. I think that's an episode. Yeah. Thanks for listening, everybody. Thank you, Alex and John, for joining me. Send in your listener mail to connectivity@nintendoworldreport.com. That is connectivity@nintendoworldreport.com. We will see you next week, I think. Bye.
Bye. Bye.